Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
What up, yo? It's me, Eric, and we are back with another edition of Bombing, where I talk with friends, comedians, musicians, and chefs about their worst moments on stage and also their worst moments in the kitchen. Today, we have an esteemed chef on the pod, Roy Choi, the prolific restaurateur and one of the pioneers of the food truck movement with the revolutionary Koji Food Truck in LA, serving up Korean taco deliciousness. He's a dear friend of mine, and he shares his bombing moments in the kitchen and trying to cook while blazed out of his mind. As always, please subscribe to the podcast to get new episodes every week, rate it 5 stars, and on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to Big Money Players Diamond to get an exclusive clip from my chat with Roy Choi, plus ad-free episodes weekly. Let's get into it.
Bombing with Eric Andre.
Called Bombing. I just want to know
the trials and tribulations of Roy Choi. I want to know the worst gig you ever had, the worst restaurant review you ever had, the worst meal you ever made, the worst gig you ever had. I want to know just like the worst. I mean, you've lived in and worked in some gnarly kitchens, yes. I'm assuming, mm-hmm. with some gnarly motherfuckers.
Yeah.
I came up under some gnarly motherfuckers, some hotheads and shit.
So yeah, sure, for sure. I came up before PC and before... I'm from the 90s, so...
Oh, shit, so people were saying racist shit to you in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah, racist
all the
shit.
Time.
I held my own, Luckily enough, I had a background to be able to hold my own, but if I didn't hold my own, yeah, I mean, it's not just racist shit, it's sexist shit, it's racist shit, it's aggressive, competitive...
Toxic environments.
But there's also, a good side to it. There's a chill side. It's like any industry. You look at football in the 70s, porn in the 80s, cooking in the 90s, it's give and take,
yeah.
It's what we got because we don't have that much information. Now there's too much information that everything is like you're walking on needles. But back
right.
then, people are just going for it back then.
Right.
You're just going for it. Like I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying no one knew any fucking better.
Right.
So it's just what's coming out. I kind of miss that, I don't know if the right word is transparency, but just that primalism of just saying whatever the fuck was on your mind.
Right. No filter.
No filter.
Raw. No Vaseline.
Yes. We had songs. We had songs that had no filter.
Wait, so what was the worst gig? What did you, before you had, your own restaurants, where were you? Where'd you cut your teeth or what was the worst gigs you had?
I mean, I cut my teeth in New York. I went to culinary school out there. I cooked in New York restaurants.
This is in the 90s?
In the 90s, yeah.
What year? Do you remember?
96, 97, yeah. 98.
So this is back in the day when I remember I went to dinner with Bobby Flay and Michael Voltaggio one time. Uh-huh. Tony Hawk invited me to the dinner. And Voltaggio told me that, he goes, literally chefs would have
cookbooks that looked like they were like written by an old Italian grandmother. There was no internet. I mean, there was like the earliest stages of the internet, but like there was actually like the secret recipe because you couldn't just like go online and watch 55,000 YouTube videos about every single recipe. You really had to like work under some psycho chef and really get in their good graces and figure out each one of these recipes. Like it was like, it was medieval compared to now, which you have all this information at your fingertips.
It's very medieval. I guess it could be the same as like stand-up comedy in a sense where you had to go out on the road and stay in motels and like pay your dues and all that. You know, the whole thing of paying dues, like in our generations, like it's real stuff because there was no internet. And so, yeah, you had like right now people think working at a job for like or doing something for 1 year is a long time.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's almost too long for people. Like they want instant success. Back then, it was understood that you would work for 7 years under someone in obscurity, you know, and just learning and absorbing is very like kung fu.
Right.
You know,
it's like Kill Bill.
It's like Kill Bill. It's like
you're putting your hands in like broken glass and fire.
It was very, it was very Saturday morning kung fu movie, like going to the top of the bamboo forest and balancing and hitting tree trunks. You know, that's what it was. And that's the only way you could learn. And and then yes, there were books, but these books were written like decades ago,
right?
And they were all European,
right?
And so yeah, if you ever needed like something or a vinaigrette or anything, like just something, if you're like kind of freestyling, you would have to go back to the office, look up the book, and kind of like it was a very Dewey Decimal System type.
It was like a library.
Yeah.
What, did you see people get rocked ever in kitchens, like fucking spill hot boiling water on themselves or just burn themselves with hot mops or whatever?
No, like, I've seen it. I was the one that was spilling stuff and causing fires and because I got into cooking late. And then I don't have real like horror stories, but the one thing I did have in that time of my life in the late 90s was I had this unique intersection and ability where I would always walk in on people having sex.
In the kitchen?
Yeah. I don't know if you have. I mean, it's just something that's following me. I've been walked in on like 5 times in my life. And then there was just this period of time in the 90s where I would always either be walked in on or I'd walk in on something. And it would just be like, I would be completely innocent where I'm just going down to get like flour, you know, or breadcrumbs.
Yeah. And then just two like cooks were
it's
so
just happening
hot and,
all
hot
the time
and heavy.
In New York. It was happening all the time.
Were people just drunk and coked up, or just like the pressure of work just led to these primal urges?
It's the pressure. It's like
sleep deprivation pressure.
It's just it was like just what it was back then, you know. And then in New York, the kitchens have levels, right? So in your mind, you think that there are these like hidden chambers. So there's the kitchen level, and then there's like a storage level, there's the office on the third floor, and then there's the basement, you know how New York streets are. And so it was always in the kegs are in the bottom, the 50-pound sacks of flour, and those are perfect spots to get it on. But it was like but the weird thing
was fucking down by the flour.
Fucking down by the flour, man, because there's 6 stacks of flour, 50-pound sacks of flour bins. So you could do it either way. You could do a doggy style. You could you could be on bottom. It doesn't matter. You could lay down. You could do missionary, whatever you want. Kegs, you have handles to hold on to. You know, so it's just, it was happening all the time. And it was just like quick shit, you know, like.
Know all the advantages of each.
Yeah, I don't know why I know all that stuff. Well,
I
know it.
I know why.
Yeah, I know it because
Years of
experience of walking in on it, man. Unfortunately, I wasn't the one being walked in on in those situations, but I was the one always I was always like this dumb Mr. Magoo, like walking in with like an empty hotel pan, trying to pick up panko flour, and then that's the type of stuff that was happening to me. But I was in
New
York.
What about rats? How many rats did you see?
I didn't see that many rats. I worked in really good restaurants, so I didn't really see that many rats in New York. Okay. I was living actually up just below Spanish Harlem, up in like East Upper East Side, so I'd see some like on the way home to work, but or on the subway, but not at work. But like the bombing stuff in the kitchens in New York was me. I got into professional cooking a little bit later, like in my later 20s. So I was like trying to make up for lost time. So I kind of went for kitchens I wasn't ready for yet. You know, so I tried to like, it would be like you getting on stages you're not even prepared for. You know, like you haven't even put in the work yet.
Right.
And so I get in there and I was just with all these like assassins and pros and I was just trying to keep up. And then I have this really crazy problem when I get nervous. It doesn't happen as much anymore because I'm not that as nervous anymore. But when I was younger, I was really nervous and shy.
Yeah,
I fucking bleed from the nose.
No way.
Yeah, like fucking like you would have a fire hydrant.
Really?
Yeah. So
you would get so nervous that your nose would start bleeding?
My nose would start bleeding, yeah. So
I can relate to that.
Yeah, and I think maybe part of it is definitely like my anxiety and my shyness, but part of it is I was like born with like a cleft, so my whole like nose palate and bone is a little bit different.
Yeah.
So my whole nasal passages and everything is really weird. So all that, and then so I'd be in the middle of the service and then my nose would start bleeding. And yeah. So then I'd stuff one up and then I'd stuff the other up.
And then
one night I was pulling a chicken stock off the thing and it started, the fat fell off the top and then it, like, the fire just took over the whole island. And then once it took over the whole island, and my nose wouldn't stop bleeding. So it looked like two big, like, maxi pads in my nostrils. And then they had to stop service for a second and clean up. And then the chef just looks at me. He's just shaking his head. But it was like, it was a pretty comedic moment because he's looking at me. There's this huge fire. They have to stop service. Everyone's pissed off. But how can they get mad at me? I'm like the little kid in Stand By Me. You know, like I'm just like.
You're trying.
I'm trying.
You're trying so hard. You really mean to do well.
I really meant to do well. And I'm sitting there with two bloody noses. And so they just like, everyone jumped in to help me out. That's the great thing about kitchens is, you know, like when they know you're trying, they'll jump in and help you out.
So it's not all like the worst parts. It's not all people trying to cut each other's heads off. And
it's not that, but it is a lot of competitiveness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are horror stories. Unfortunately, you know, like I didn't really experience them too much, but there are a lot of horror stories where people bump into you with hot shit.
You know, that sucks.
Yeah. Or leave a knife out, leave a knife out.
That sucks.
That points outward.
That's not cool.
But those are bad kitchen. Just like in anything in life, there are bad people in bad situations and people with malicious intent. In most cases, people are just trying to like see what you're made of. I would say the good is better than bad, but that doesn't mean like they're like nice. It means like they're just pushing you to see like, can you keep up?
They're testing your mettle.
Yes.
Yeah. I worked in a kitchen for 3 days. I waited tables.
Okay.
There's a restaurant called Burritoville in the West Village. This is probably 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. I just graduated college. I want to say early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the worst server in the history of restaurants. I burned myself every 5 seconds. I forgot you got to tell the customer when the plate is hot.
Yeah. Just
be, hey, be careful. And it was like very rowdy, loud gay guys in the neighborhood at the time. So like, I would like put a plate down and be scalding hot, and a guy would go to touch the plate. I forgot to tell him not to. Yeah. And he'd be like, it's fucking hot. And I'm like, oh shit, I'm supposed to tell you that. And I lied on my job interview and I told the guy I was waiting tables since I was 14 years old for my parents. Never worked in a restaurant once in my life.
That's how I was as a cook in New York.
Lied through my teeth. I was fucking horrible. Dropping plates. I would like scoop when the customer would be like, can I take this home and to go back? I would just scoop it out with my hands and the other waiters were like, dude, if you're going to do that, don't let the customer see you doing that. And I was like, shit. And I went, the best chefs in the world use their hands. And the person training me was like, you're not the best chef in the world. You're horrible. You're fucking horrible.
That's such an error. Like, we don't serve like hot plates anymore. Like, it sounds like a restaurant that would serve like a plate that was like
scalding.
Yeah, scalding.
Scalding.
Plate.
Yeah.
Other than Peter Luger's, no one really does that.
No one fucks with that anymore. Sometimes you get the sizzling fajita plate, like Chili's kind of thing. But that's telling you it's fucking cooking. But my friend Derek Beckles, I hope he doesn't mind me telling you a story. He worked at a restaurant in Manhattan. I got to ask him which restaurant this is.
Okay.
Not to put it on blast, just out of curiosity. He was like, this was not like a cheap restaurant. He goes, this was a fancy. Mm-hmm. This is a fancy, I don't know if it was Michelin star, but like, well, whatever. But like, it was, you know, fine dining, white tablecloth shit. And he tells a story. I wish he was here to tell it. He tells it better than me. But there was a tomato soup, a tomato bisque or something they were serving. And everybody's wolfing it down. It's like the special soup of the day. It's a soup du jour. Fucking people, everybody wolfing it down. People ask for seconds and shit. And then he goes back into the kitchen and he's like, I got more soup. I need more soup. I got more soup orders. And the chef was like, no, no, no. And he's like, what? And he said, like, the cauldron of soup was like dumped out and going down the drain or something. Uh-huh. And there was like a gigantic dead bloated rat at the bottom. So he said, like, people were wolfing it down because it had this like gamey rat brine. It was giving it like the perfect flavor.
It makes me think of this time in high school where I knew a bunch of kids that were working at a pizza spot. Again, I just had this thing of, in life where I walk in on shit, you know, whether it was sex. But back then, I walk in and they're all peeing in the fucking tomato sauce.
What? Why?
Because they're fucking 16 years old.
That's a crime against humanity. Yes. That people were eating?
Yes, that was the sauce they were putting on the pizzas. Yes,
come on, Jesus but Christ!
It must be something with tomatoes and rats because
it was the best pizza you ever had. Probably,
I think they were busier than ever that night. Yeah.
Bombing with Eric Andre.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
With Eric Andre.
What's the worst like restaurant review you ever had? Have you gotten like ripped apart? I don't read reviews. I tell my publicist, like, unless it's good, don't send it to me. I don't care. Like,
I did get ripped apart by the New York Times.
Oh, I got ripped apart by the New York Times.
By Pete Wells.
Is he like
the theater critic, you know, like
of it's
the
food?
Type of food, you know, like the type of thing where people are waiting on pins and needles for his review, and then it's a make or break situation, you know.
I think you're doing fine.
Well, luckily, career wise, I wasn't at a point where I really gave a fuck about it. But the project we were working on mattered, you know. And I don't know if you know about this project called Local I did out in Watts in Oakland, but you know, it was a project for the people I grew up with. You know, like it was like going back to the neighborhood, building a restaurant, employing everyone. You know, providing Wi-Fi, internet, jobs, nutrition, training.
Right.
And we were just building, like trying to build a great restaurant in the hood. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so we started in Watts, Oakland. You know, we went to San Jose, San Francisco, all that. And, He came in and just ripped us apart, man. Just
wait, so this stuffy white New York Times food critic, is he white? I'm assuming he's white. Stuffy?
Yeah, I don't know. They wear disguises, so I don't know what he looks like.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Food reviewers wear disguises when they come in?
They do. They do, yeah.
Oh, because they want to be incognito. They want to be treated as if they're... Yeah. They don't want special treatment, so they know what the real deal is.
Yeah, that industry now is kind of fleeting because of the way the world is and the way the internet is.
Right.
But when they were in their prime,
yeah.
You know,
there was only like five of those people.
Fake reservations, burner phones.
Whoa.
You know, disguises. Whoa. Like horrible disguises. Like disguises
like
you would
Panther.
Wear. Yeah, Pink Panther. Disguises like you would wear. Yeah.
Like fucking Groucho Marx
yeah,
mustache.
Yeah, ridiculous fucking sabotage Beastie Boys shit. And they would go in restaurants like that.
But also, that guy missed the point of that project. That project, yeah. you were trying to uplift marginalized communities.
Yeah,
and bring vitality to the hood.
Yeah, just
bring
jobs,
culture.
You
yeah,
know, jobs.
Bring jobs, create jobs. So yeah. That guy, like, that's like a completely missing the point.
But the thing is, we were two high profile chefs opening a restaurant in Watts. There was a lot of attention. You know, everyone was writing about this opening. And so, you know, it was a big deal for them to actually cover it. And you know, Pete, he's a tremendous writer. He's like, yeah. You know, he's the writer of the New York Times. But he has a shtick where he goes to a restaurant like in the beginning of each year. He did Guy Fieri's restaurant. He did a few others where he just fucking leans in.
He annihilates you. He gets off on it.
I think so. I don't know, but I think he does. And you know, I got 0 stars. I got 0 stars from the New York Times. So I would say that's bombing.
That's rough. It has to hurt, right? It hurts, right?
It hurts on every level. Even though I say it doesn't hurt, it hurts. You know, because we're not opening, you know, we're not the ones peeing in the fucking pizza sauce. You know, we're trying.
Right.
You know, like we really care about this thing. And, you know, for us to get a zero.
To do all that work and get it,
you know, even if you know like your mission is higher than that and it's not about the ego, it still hurts.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
has he ever said anything nice? Has he always been after you? Do you feel like?
Or? I didn't even know I was on his radar,
yeah.
You know, until that.
Yeah.
You know, so, because yeah. New Yorkers don't really give a shit about us in LA. They don't even think we exist, you know, so.
Was there like, but that's no longer true. Is that still true? Maybe back in the day. Is that still like that? Is there still like a East Coast, West Coast, Biggie Tupac chef beef?
I don't know if there's a chef beef, but I do think that New Yorkers still think that New York is the center of the world,
uh-huh.
You know, in many ways,
yeah.
You know, and, but they love to live in LA.
What about Parisian chefs? Are they even more
up
there?
They're cool, man. They're cool.
Really?
It's like French New Wave cinema, man. They're fucking
the new guns. I'm talking about the old school cats with the Chef Boyardee fucking hats.
No, they're rough as hell in the kitchen, but they're cool. They're cool as beans outside.
Really?
Yeah, French. The French are cool, man. They fucking smoke cigarettes.
I'm not talking about all French people.
No,
but
French
I thought
chefs.
The French chefs. Were the toughest in the...
They're hard. They're
I thought
hardcore.
They're the fucking, the like, brick shit house.
Yeah.
Fucking, I thought they were like the teacher in that movie Whiplash, like throwing fucking drum cymbals at your fucking head.
Yes. But that's inside the kitchen.
Outside, they're chill.
Outside, they're chill, man. They're real
shit.
Chill, yeah.
So outside, the New York chefs are not, they're dicks inside and out of the kitchen.
I wouldn't say it's the chefs. I would say it's more the patrons and the diners.
Oh,
you know, you know, and just like New York and LA in general, like a lot of times we get overlooked. You know, like in
really?
A lot of, yeah, I think so.
LA is the capital of. I mean, I'm not an expert, but yeah. I thought like LA is the capital of restaurants.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
but you got to remember, our casual attitude and our lifestyle. A lot of people don't think that we're trying, or it doesn't get computed that we actually give a shit sometimes. So what I mean by that is, the Michelin Guide came here years ago. Like, I don't have too much beef with many things in life. I'm pretty zen,
right?
But fuck the Michelin Guide, you know. Straight up.
I heard it's like more and more
came,
bullshit.
And
right?
then and everyone. You
I've
know,
been
I,
to bad Michelin stars.
Man, I come from an era where you fucking, you know, you remember shit and you hold the line. I come from that era here.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
Like, you know,
line.
Like your word means something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you got people's back. You fucking, like, you represent, you know, like, and you hold down your shit. You hold down your hood, you know, like. The Michelin guy came to LA and told us that we were uncivilized.
What?
Yeah, and that there was no place in this city that could have great food to their measurements because it wasn't European based, you know, and you know, because you could go to a restaurant with shorts on or whatever the case may be, you know.
And then, this guy's living in like the 1800s.
Exactly. And then they came back years later, 7-8 years later, and then reintroduced themselves to California, and everyone acted, everyone just got back on their dick like they didn't say that shit. And for me, I just remember,
No.
So a lot of people look at us like we're not trying hard, you know, whereas like in other cities, like because it's, you know, very European core based, it looks like it's more intelligent or whatever the case may be.
There's this like stuffy blue blood. Like,
yeah, you know, Miami gets that a lot too. There can't be great cuisine down in regions where people are just chilling and having a great time, you know, because it's
fucking
not serious.
Crazy. I didn't know that LA, that's so fun. That's all news to me. That's all news to me. Because I thought like LA is the high water mark and everybody's trying to catch up to LA, but I guess it's like this new...
I would say it's like new, amongst the people, yes, you know, but still amongst the guard, that
the old guard, the gatekeepers.
The gatekeepers that control media or control the industry in a sense that get kickbacks from giving reviews or things like that. I would say
it's all corrupt too. There's some corruption there.
I bet fucking the Michelin guy is corrupt as shit.
I've been to some Michelin star restaurants that fucking sucked, that were like dog food. Yeah. I went to one in Prague and I like left and I was like, that was mediocre. And my sister goes, this place has a Michelin star. And I was like, dude, this is... I heard that it's been bullshit from the beginning, though. It's a tire company, right? Isn't it a company that makes tires? It's Michelin. Well, it's the same. It's the same company.
Yeah, the Michelin man.
Why does a tire company tell me what the best fucking foie gras is?
Well, the history of it is they built the guide because they wanted people to buy tires. They wanted people to travel throughout Europe.
Uh-huh.
Instead of taking the Eurorail and the train, they wanted people to get in their cars and travel to these remote regions. Go into the deep part of France or, you know, Hungary or Czechoslovakia or Prague or whatever. And they wanted them to drive these, you know, places. And so the guide was there, you know, to tie it all in.
So it's almost kind of been a scam from the beginning. It's almost like they're in their own self-interest. I think that of the younger generations, nobody's paying attention to that shit. Maybe. I mean, I don't know. But I think you said, but I didn't know that LA was the underdog, and that's what I'm saying. And I wanted to apologize to your business partner, who I think hates my guts, because when we ate dinner together, she was like, why are you leaving LA? Do you remember this? I don't think you remember this.
Oh, in Chicago, yeah.
Can I tell this story?
Go ahead, tell it.
Can I tell this story? And we can lift it out if you don't want to.
Because you were just about to move to New York.
So we eat, we're eating in Chicago. I didn't know your business partner's from LA, I didn't know LA had such underdog status.
Yeah.
And you spent your life defending it. I also hate where I'm from. So anybody that loves where I'm from, I'm like, why do you love where you're from? I fucking hate where I'm from. I'm from Boca Raton, Florida. I don't have any nationalism or fucking, I'm not like swinging the flag or singing the national anthem for where I'm from. So I'm like eating with you. And your business partner goes, why are you leaving LA? And I go, I've been here 15 years. I'm kind of bored with it. I'm either in my car or in my office or there's no spontaneity. I want to be in New York again. So I'm walking around. I run into a friend. I went into a restaurant or a little shop I never saw before. I want that spontaneity to inform my creativity. I miss walking. I miss the diversity of New York. I'm like gushing about New York. Yeah. And I've never met anybody else that hated me more during a dinner the entire time. She was like, uh-huh. Like, I was like, it reminded me of like, if I said that to Tupac. Right? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, Suge Knight. Like,
and she was so excited to meet you that night too. And
really?
And at the end, she was just like,
Did she really think I was talking shit about LA?
No.
She doesn't hate me, does she?
No, she doesn't.
I really felt like she was very warm at the top and there was a sharp 180. I might have been in my own mind, but I was like, shit, I really shouldn't have. Some people actually like where they're from. I should. She can talk shit about Boca Raton, Florida, if she wants. Okay. Maybe that'll even it out.
I'm proud of her though, because us in LA, we don't like to back down, you know, from people talking about our city, because people talk about our city all the time. They make fun of it all the time.
Really? I thought L.A. is
people
like,
make fun of L.A. because people really? Come to L.A. It's usually people that come to L.A. and don't get everything they wanted out of the city. You know, whether that's for a job, for acting, for creative endeavors, for entrepreneurship, or whatever it is. You know, like they'll come to L.A. because we're the land of opportunity, and then they'll come and then they'll leave and say LA's fucking horrible.
Oh, they'll be bitter.
They'll be bitter. So a lot, we get a lot of that.
I think we get a lot of stereotypes,
you know, about who we are. And but then again, those are things that people think of us as if like if people only went to Times Square, you know, and said New York sucks.
Right, exactly. You know? The and stereotype of LA is people are like, I went to LA once, I hated it. And I go, well, what neighborhood did you go to? I went to Beverly Hills for 24 hours and there was a bunch of plastic surgery. I go, that is not the Los Angeles experience. Los Angeles is a massive city with no nexus, and every single neighborhood has its own identity. It's a patchwork of various neighborhoods, each with their own very specific identity. So you really cannot make a broad generalization about it. I lived there for 15 years, and I still am figuring out what it's about. So I would agree with you on that. However, when I travel the world, L.A. is held in high esteem, I thought.
Yeah, we are.
Because I'm from Florida, and I'll tell you, the butt of every joke ever. But I relish in that. So it's funny that you're defensive of L.A. to me, because when people make fun of Florida, it just gives me more and more power. I'm like, because I grew up hating it. I grew up in these suburbs just filled with elderly people on death's door, which is fine. But it just was like not a place for a kid or a mixed kid that was like full of energy and creativity. I resented it. So now everybody hating on Florida and all these Florida man memes, I finally feel so validated and vindicated. And just, I'm like, I knew it. I knew this place sucked. And I knew I got out as soon as I turned 18 for a reason. I feel like I relish in people's hatred of my of where I'm from. Only do I not defend it, I'm like high-fiving motherfuckers. I'm like, keep on pouring gasoline on the flames.
Florida's good at being being the worst of the worst, always. It's great.
I saw a meme. It said, America is the Florida of the world. Yeah. It's like America compared to other countries is the Florida. America is the world's Florida. That's what it said. Yeah. I was like, yes. But I love Miami. I will say Miami's the exception because Miami was rough. I was born in Miami and it was very rough for a while. And then it was like douchey house music for a while, like Euro trash, douchey club, like Mykonos fucked Las Vegas, and it just made this like it was like that kind of culture, which was like vapid and whack. And then all of a sudden, in the past 10-15 years, it's had this like renaissance, and it's like all the things awesome about it got more awesome and louder, and now it's like one of my favorite cities in America.
Orlando, outside of the tour stuff, is cool too, man. There's a lot of great food in Orlando.
Really?
Yeah. You gotta.
I only went to Disney World when I was a little kid, and I haven't been there since.
I heard Pensacola is dope too. It's rough, but I heard it's dope.
Pensacola.
I heard people out there
that
cool
can't
as,
be
cool
true
as fuck, man.
No,
yeah, man.
I resent
Roy
you for
Jones,
saying that.
Roy Jones Jr., man.
Well, besides Roy Jones Jr., it's fucking. It's go out there.
I'll go.
I'll buy your ticket for
okay,
you.
All right. I'll let you know.
I don't think you'll be
with Eric Andre.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
With Eric Andre.
Have you ever been too wasted at work? Has there ever been a time where you got fucking trashed and you were like, shit, I did too much?
I've tried, you know, I'm a celebrated stoner. I love being, you know, love getting high.
I didn't know that.
And I thought it would be cool to cook stoned, but it's not.
No.
Yeah, it's like, I thought it was, you know, I thought it was like rock and roll.
What happened?
There's too much shit going on.
Yeah.
And so, it's just everything fell apart. I can't. And then there are people relying on you.
No,
so
like, I mean, did you smoke a blunt? Did you do an edible? Did you smoke a joint? Were you
all partying? Of the above. Yeah. Oh, edible no. And smoke and completely stoned. Like fucking the kind where you kind of got to hold the edge of the table once in a while. And but, you know, you think everything's cool. But like, you know, like the difference of like maybe going up on stage or even doing an act or whatever stoned, or the thing about a kitchen is there are like 30 people relying on you.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And then things are coming at a pace that your mind is not ready for.
Yeah.
And then you're dealing with fire and knives and you got to remember shit. You can't just like freestyle and ramble. So that didn't go well.
It was a disaster. Was that recent?
I always try like, it's almost like a seasonal thing. I try every year to get on the line stone to see if you could hack it. See if I could hack it, and I can't.
Yeah, that's like fucking crazy. Yeah. Edibles too?
Yeah.
Edibles will knock you into Neptune.
Yeah. And so, I've tried to cook stone. We, at the Kogi truck one time, made edibles. We made our cakes into an edible, like tres leches cake, but we didn't know how to measure the butter. So each cake ended up having probably like an ounce of weed in it.
So people were like zooted.
We ate it. So the team, like five of us, ate them. And this was early Kogi. We went out on the street and we couldn't function. We had to leave the truck there overnight because we couldn't drive back. And we couldn't count the change. So we just like Halloween candy. We just dumped all our change and our dollar bills like on the thing. And we just told people, just take the fucking money or leave the fucking money. And then we would just be making food. We didn't even like follow the tickets. We would just be making food. Whatever was in that burrito was in that burrito. It didn't matter what you ordered. But that was a great day. Somebody was there in Venice on that Saturday. Yeah, somebody.
So
somebody.
You were zooted.
Yeah.
Just like no matter what the order was, you're like, this has this in it now, man.
Yeah, this has this in it now. We were like a Madrid waiter, yeah.
There's a restaurant in Japan where the servers are elderly and they have dementia.
Oh, I read about that, yeah. That's awesome.
And you just get what you get.
That's a dream restaurant. Man.
That's wild.
I love that shit.
You would go?
I would make a restaurant like that. I tried to make a restaurant like that. Kogi was trying.
What do you mean? You tried to hire people with dementia?
No. I tried to make a restaurant where nobody could say or knew what they were getting.
Like, oh, it was that freestyle.
You just get what you get.
I love that.
Yeah.
It was like omakase. It's like, it's like, you're the chef. You're the expert. Fucking hook it up.
Yes.
I like that. But the dementia has a different kick a little to it. Different. That's not omakase. That's that's like Russian roulette. That's fucking wild.
but in Japan, because they're so polite to each other. So everyone is there and they just endure it. Which is amazing.
Go.
Yeah.
Have you gone to Japan?
I have.
Have you?
I worked in Japan.
Really?
Yeah. I worked in Japan in Tokyo and Yokohama. as a cook.
Oh, back in the day.
Oh, that was another time I bombed in Japan.
What? After New York?
No, this was, after New York. This was 2003. I worked in the summer of 2003 in Japan to just be better, you know, like, and so I was working in Iron Chef Michiba's kitchen. Uh-huh. He was the original Iron Chef, and then I worked in a hotel in Yokohama, and I thought I brought it. I thought I represented for the US of A.
Yeah, you were like gang. I got this.
I was Dream Team. Yeah, I was Magic Johnson. I thought I brought it. And at the end, they gave me my report card or my analysis.
Oh, no.
And the only thing the Japanese could say about me was that I was a good eater.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
That's harsh.
Why
you couldn't have fucked up that bad? Like, was that about?
I've been, there was a period in my life where I got by because of effort. And that was for a long period, probably up until about 2005. It wasn't that long ago.
Uh-huh.
And then something kicked in, you know, later on with Kogi. But I tried my best, and I just couldn't keep up with these cooks. They're so good in Japan. So fucking good. They're so precise.
That's brutal.
Yeah, and they're just, everything is perfect. The cuts are perfect, and I was just all thumbs, and I was getting through it, but I was like a guy sweating bullets, you know, like
nose bleeding,
everything, and. They were supposed to make these comments on like how my aptitude was and all these things, and the only thing they wrote was that he was a great eater.
Oh, that's a kick in the fucking crotch.
Yeah, but that's a bomb. But it's great, you know.
Don't you think that all those failures and trials and tribulations is what has made you so successful?
I think not only just me, but it helps. I think it's what helps me relate to a lot of others, because a lot of others, you know, we all fuck up, man.
Yeah.
We all bomb, you know, and that's what your podcast is about. It's just. We're not in a society where we can share those things a lot, you know, or admit to those things because we're judged on those things. But I think it would be better if we're able to express them more, because then we can all laugh about them and then analyze them and then use them as a part of like our own kind of identity, you know?
Yeah.
Because without that, then we're all just trying to be kind of the same model of things. But I just hope that we can talk about them more, because I think that's what helps me relate, because you know, I feed people on the streets all day, every day,
right?
And I think it's just the way that we express ourselves, the way our food tastes. They can taste, you know, like mistakes and failures and speed bumps in our food, you know, as far as like when you eat it, and it just doesn't feel like fully put together, you know. It feels like there have been a lot of, you know, things that got that to that point. And I think that's what it makes Kogi relate to so many people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they might be going through it right now. They might have fucked up at their job. And they come and eat at Kogi, and they're like, oh, shit, Roy fucked up too, you know?
It makes it human. We're not robots.
Yeah, it makes it human,
It makes it human. Wow, it's fucking fascinating. Wait, I had fucking one other question. Oh, has there ever been like a robbery or like some fucking crazy-ass customer going fucking nuts, or like any meltdowns or anything at any of your restaurants? Somebody coming in butt naked and taking a shit on the wall, any of that kind of fucking crazy shit?
Oh, man. I'm sure there are plenty of chefs that have gone through that. We have been lucky. We haven't. But early in the Kogi days, I was the fucking train wreck, because I would take food out of people's hands. Because
what do you mean?
What happened was
while they were mid-bite?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. What happened was, when we started Kogi, we were all out of a job, and it was our freedom. Like, it was like truly like our ability to just do whatever the hell we wanted.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was like finally my chance to be just like, this is what I serve, and that's what you get.
Yeah.
You know, like just like no substitutions, no sauce on the side.
Yeah.
No nothing. And so it was sushi bar style, omakase style,
right,
in my mind.
Right.
And so when people would start to ask for things, instead of getting mad, I would get so mad, but instead of like getting violent or anything like that, I would just walk out of the truck. I would take their food out of their hand mid-pipe. I would replace it with a crumpled up bill. And then we would close the doors and take off.
Are you sure?
Yeah. So that was kind of the Kogi style. And I kind of...
Wait, if they asked for a substitute, you would do
that? Yeah. God forbid they asked for sauce on the side.
Were you like hot tempered in those days? Was it like hot?
No.
Were you like hot blooded?
No,
you were just,
it was
like, frustrated.
It was earnest. I'm kind of actually proud of it at the time, man.
I think it's
kind
of cool.
Yeah, it was very earnest. You know, it was very earnest. There's a famous sushi bar chef here called Nozawa that his family now runs Sugarfish.
Yeah,
he would do the same. He would, you know, if you asked him for a California roll, he'd kick you out, you know? So it was kind of
so it was
in
like
that
Jiro
vein.
Dreams of Sushi meets like the soup Nazi from Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Like no soup for you kind of style.
Except on the streets. Yeah. That, you know. But it was all out of love. And that eventually evolved into a deeper love where we took care of people. But I think Kogi's and everything that we do has been lucky in the sense that, you know, people relate, you know, people feel like we're a part of them. So, you know,
We
can go anywhere, you know.
Yeah.
So, but no one's coming naked and took a shit.
Maybe I'll do it tonight.
Yeah, you might have to.
They tried to stop us, and we can't be stopped.
Can't be stopped, man.
Roy Choi, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
With Eric Andre.
Bombing with Eric Andre is brought to you by Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network and iHeart Podcast. Executive produced by Han Sani and Olivia Aguilar. Edited and sound designed by Andy Harris. Our art is by Dylan Vanderberg. And if you want to confess to your own bombing moments or give us a shout out, go rate us 5 stars and drop a review on your podcast app of choice. Write about your own stories of bombing at life. If you're on Apple Podcasts, you can also subscribe to Big Money Players Diamond to get exclusive bonus content with every episode. And listen to all my episodes ad-free. Bye!
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.